Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Susanna, and welcome to the Codeco podcast. In this podcast, we'll keep you up to date with the latest app development tech talk. Now, here's the show.
This is the Codeco podcast. This episode was recorded on Sunday, the 10th of March, 2024. I am your host, Drew Freeman, with my ever-effervescent co-host, Jennifer Bailey.
Thanks, Drew. Today on the show, we have Bhagat Singh and Michaela Karen. Bhagat is an iOS engineer at PhonePay in Bangalore, India. He has been a member of the Codeco team for more than half a decade now, contributing all around in books, articles, and boot camps. He also organizes Swift meetups in his area and is also a speaker at quite a few of them. Michaela is an independent iOS developer, building her own indie apps and doing freelance work. She shares her developer experience on social media, speaks at conferences, and organizes the monthly online meetup called iOS Dev Happy Hour.
Michaela, Bhagat, welcome to the show. Thank you so much. I'd also be remiss if I didn't mention Michaela also is a podcast host as well. Coffee Over Swift or Swift Over Coffee?
Swift Over Coffee.
with the true guru of Swift, Paul Hudson. So that was a heck of a catch there. I definitely recommend that show. It's great fun. Where to start with both of you? So we're basically taking this from the point of view of having somebody who is very ingrained in the corporate world and somebody who is ingrained in the freelance world. And we're trying to find out the pros and the cons and what the differences are. So what I want to start with is to ask each of you where you are in your iOS career and how you got there so far. So Bhagat, let's start with you on that one.
I started out iOS when Swift came out, basically. I was in my college back then. I guess it was my sophomore year. And I was exploring iOS, and Objective-C seemed pretty daunting. And exactly the same year, Swift came out, right? So I thought that everyone's gonna start from the same starting line. So why not start now? Right. So I got into it. I just learned from YouTube, free YouTube tutorials on how to make apps. Reventlink.com, or now known as Codeco, was a great inspiration then as well. Luckily, I got an internship at an organization. They were building out their app from scratch. I had a mentor there who guided me into like how to do stuff, how like the do's and don'ts of the iOS and all of that. I joined that company after that, and now, yep. So yeah, 5 years into iOS as my day job now.
Michaela, how about you?
So I started iOS dev in 2019. I started learning. So I previously went to college at Purdue University and studied like mechanical and electrical engineering. So I did not study computer science or like CS, but I did end up getting a minor in what's called like computer information technology. So it's kind of close to CS, but it's like also not CS. But I just did a minor. So that just meant I got to pick and choose the classes I wanted to take. So I took all the coding classes and did not take the like system design UML kind of classes because those were not as interesting. So I did like a little bit of coding in college, but then it wasn't until 2019 that I actually started learning iOS development, which coincidentally is when Swift UI dropped. But it was funny because I was so new, I didn't know it was like a big thing. So like Swift UI drops and I'm watching the keynote and I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. Not like, oh my gosh, this is like life changing for like iOS dev. It was funny. I like didn't realize that that's what was like happening at the time just because of how new I was. So at the first I did start like with UIKit and started learning iOS dev. And that was mostly through like online tutorials. I used Code with Chris and some Codeco, Ray Wunderlich at the time, all those kind of like tutorials all online, Sean Allen, and just like various other mainly video tutorials, just because I like watching videos more so than reading books and everything. So I learned through that mostly for iOS dev, and then later started applying for jobs and landed my first iOS dev job in the beginning of 2021. And then I had now two iOS dev jobs, but then more recently I have gone fully indie developer and like fully freelance. So I took like the leap to quit my job, and now technically I'm unemployed, if you want to call it that.
No, a software engineer is never unemployed. A software engineer is currently working on proofs of concept.
Yep, exactly.
I have a degree in CI, computer information technology, as well, so I'm familiar with that.
Yep, it was CIT.
Yeah, but that UML will come to bite you if anybody ever asks you to do architecture stuff.
We'll get there. I'll learn it when I get there.
So basically, we're going to play this as Michaela is the freelance and Bhagat is our corporate. We're not playing against each other. I know that it's day in the life, corporate v freelance, but we're not actually going to make this a competition or anything like that. But we are going to be looking for pros and cons. So, Michaela, we'll start with you on this one. On a day that you're working, what does it look like?
So not the day that I decide to go snowboarding all day and then do 2 hours of work. I have done that, but on a day that I'm working, I attempt to keep somewhat of a routine, because at the moment I quit my job in December, so it's still like very new at the moment for me. So I'm attempting to keep somewhat of a work 9 to 5-ish hours, because that just makes it easier to actually get stuff done. Otherwise, you end up doing things at like randomly at midnight, and then if you get stuck, you kind of can't ask for help. But what I do is generally keep some kind of routine and attempt to prioritize throughout the day of what I actually need to get done. So, you know, you wake up in the morning at a corporate job sometimes and you have like a very specific thing or a specific ticket that you're working on. I generally, like, some of my freelance projects have specific tickets. Some of them kind of don't. And it's more of an idea of what we need to finish, like a very bigger, broader idea. But because of that, it then makes it harder and you have to break down what you are working on. But then again, you are responsible for doing that breakdown too. So I'll try to break down like the week generally. Okay, this is what we have to get done throughout the week. This is the task. Okay, now what do I do today? So I have to wake up and then figure out, okay, now break that big weekly task down and break it down even further just for that day and figure out, okay, this is today. This is how many hours I plan on working. What do I get done in those many hours is kind of like, it's all very abstract, but like that is what you have to do is figure out like, okay, this is actually what I need to work on for a specific client.
Bhagat, how is your day?
Right. So I have my weekdays pretty fixed because my workplace right now, it's not remote and it's not hybrid for some teams as well. So I go to the office almost 5 days a week. Start my day at around, let's say, 10, reach the office at around 11. That way it's kind of nice. There's no come in or come out kind of a thing. You can come in anytime you want, finish your work, get your work done, go out anytime you want. Most of the workday looks like meetings, you write some code, you get into discussions, have some food with your colleagues, all of that. Then I get back home, try to get some workout and do some cooking myself if the time is there. And yeah, that's about it.
Nice. So I'm hearing that one of the big differences between you is meetings.
Right.
Sorry, I'm snickering.
How do you handle it when you need to meet with a client? Do you meet with them from home?
Yeah, generally I use a software called Tuple or Tuple. It's a pair programming software, and it's super nice because I'll meet with the client and then we can very easily share our screen like you can in Zoom. But what's even better is you can also control the other person's screen. So like the client could have the project up on their side and I can literally then like highlight on their screen, type, and like we can go like basically into a full pair programming session if that's like what we're working on. And that I think is super nice and really easy to like just like get working on something and discuss something like in a very, very technical terms. But then other times it'll just be like a basic Zoom meeting of it's more of like your weekly sync kind of meeting too.
And for Bagat, if you can go in the office on your own schedule, how do they schedule meetings with that? Do you have to tell them ahead of time when you plan to be there, or how do they stay in sync if you can choose your own working hours?
Right. So our workplace has a concept called overlap time. So it's a fixed number of hours in the day, let's say 10:30 a.m. in the morning to 4 p.m. in the evening. Those are the overlap hours for everyone that everyone has to work out. And most of the meetings, in fact, all of the meetings are scheduled in that time frame. So yeah, so everybody is working in the overlap time, so you don't have issues for scheduling.
Bagat, are most of the people you're working with in the same time zone?
Yes, since I go to the office, I think everybody that I work with is literally in the office with me.
So you don't have remote workers on your team or anything like that?
We don't have remote workers on our team, but we do have another office in another city, like right here in India. So since the time zone is same, the overlap time is also same. Mm-hmm. And we managed to schedule all the meetings in that time.
Yeah, because I'm corporate and we have a very large percentage of our team based on the East Coast of the United States and a very large portion of our team based on the West Coast of the United States. So
right,
that overlap time kind of stretches into later hours rather than earlier hours, because if you come in early, then the West Coast team is not in at the moment.
Right.
Michaela, you're in the exact opposite. Do you ever go into a co-work place? Or are you always out on your own in your own places?
I will sometimes go into co-working places. It's generally more I work at home just because I have my nice office set up. I have my keyboard, mouse, you know, external monitor. All the lovely things of being a software dev is at home. So like I will go out to like co-working spaces here and there a little bit. But so far, personally, I've been doing a lot of travel. So because of that, I'm naturally just going to a coffee shop for something. So then I take some of my desk set up with me. So like I'll have my like monitor stand, I have an external keyboard, mouse, and I'll have like all of that sitting like at a coffee shop too. But yeah, it is nice to change up your environment because it really helps with like focus, because sometimes you're at home, like my desk is in my bedroom. So because of that, I'm like, oh, my bed is, you know, 2 feet away. I could just like walk over and take a nap, which is possible. But then you're like, oh no, I got nothing done throughout the day.
Yeah, but God, do you find that being in the office, I used to work in an office 9 to 5. Do you find that being in an office with overlap time, does that interfere with your ability to get your code work done? Are people, sometimes they would book me so full of meetings or interruptions that I would struggle to get even 2 or 3 hours of focus, and I would struggle to, you know, to get my code done. And some of us would end up working outside of the office more hours than we were salaried for. Do you ever run into that as a problem?
Right. So this started happening a lot when COVID hit and we all were in lockdown. So the boundary between work and life kind of just diminished. Like whoever wanted to ping someone on Slack or Teams or whatever, like would just do even if it's 10 p.m. in the night or whatever, right? So we learned some things from this, and we came out with 2 things. People block their focus time on their calendars, so everybody is instructed to not block meetings at those hours unless it's unavoidable. Sometimes there's a group of people so large in a meeting that you need to have that common time slot, which is understandable. Otherwise people don't hamper your focus time. Another thing that we came up with was a no meeting day. So every Thursday or every Wednesday for a week would be a no meeting day, so that there would be no meetings on that day and it would be completely focus time for an engineer.
Yeah, we also have the no meeting day for being able to drop down and get more focus done. We usually have them on Fridays, which unfortunately mixes with a sense of senior syndrome where you're like, yeah, but the weekend is coming up. I can't focus.
Right.
So
We usually have it on Wednesdays. So we have a stand up on Tuesdays and a stand up on Thursdays. So Wednesdays are no meeting day, so you get a lot of work done on Wednesday to give a significant update on Thursday. And yeah, we used to earlier have it on a Friday, which kind of slumped everyone in the team. Like no one was in a working mood on a Friday. So yeah, we moved it to Wednesday then.
So you have stand-ups twice a week?
Yeah, we used to have it thrice a week. But we figured out that twice a week works for us.
So I'm going to switch gears for a second. Michaela, we mentioned early on that you are a freelance indie developer. Now, freelance and indie are two different terms. Can you give us a bird's eye view of what the difference is between a freelance developer and an indie developer?
Yeah, so for me, freelance is I'm working with some clients, so some person that I met, and I've been very thankful. My clients are amazing. And they've all been people that I have met, like, personally or met through somebody. So it's already, like, a hot lead so that it's somebody that you... It's not like a complete stranger, basically. So that makes like being freelance like 1,000 times better. And yeah, it's a client through somebody. I'm doing work for somebody else. So it's similar to a job of you're doing work for somebody else. And then for me, an indie developer is you're working for yourself, building like your own application. So this could be your own SaaS or product. But yeah, right now I'm working on my own iOS app, and that's like my indie developer part.
Bagat, can you give us a rough idea how big your team is?
Okay, so the immediate team members that I work with, the iOS team is around 7 people, and the Android folks are around 7 people as well. So 15 member mobile team we have, and then so we at PhonePe we work differently for different apps. So PhonePe has multiple apps, so these 15 people work on a different app, and we have around you can say a 30 or a 40 member backend engineer team.
Now, when you say there are 7 people on the iOS team, you're just talking developers, right?
Right. Yes.
So if you were to take into account product managers, et cetera.
Right.
How big would you say that team is?
I would say you can add 10 more people probably with design engineers and... you can add product managers, you can add quality assurance engineers, you can add about 10 more people, yeah.
And this sort of leads me to one of the pros and cons, and that is, it is very helpful on the corporate side to say, I don't have to think about this part of the development process. Meaning the PMs are basically trying to decide with the leads what are the important things to do.
Right.
And then it gets passed off to...
Yeah, exactly. That was I was going to say that things get prioritized. The product manager, I also have an engineering manager. So they just figure out what the product needs as of this point and what could be shipped till the timeline of the next release. They just figure that out and they pass it down to whoever's going to work on that. So yeah, you're right. We don't have to think much into what's the priority and what's going
to
be shipped.
So Michaela, I'm going to turn to you now. One of my favorite things about Michaela is always wearing the hat with the unicorn on it. Michaela, how do you figuratively deal with all the hats that you're not wearing?
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, we have to figure out everything, and whether or not that's like the client figuring out what the priorities are, or it's me figuring out within a specific task how I want to break everything down. It's pretty much a lot of communication. So like, I think that's one of the biggest things about a freelancer is you have to have good communication, whether it's with the freelance, like written or verbal, like you have to have good communication. Otherwise you might go start working on something and then suddenly the client's like, that's not what I was asking, because you like didn't completely clarify something with that client. So because of that, like, you could just get in a situation of where they're, like, a really bad situation would be, like, the client being like, oh, I'm not paying for this. I didn't pay you to do that. And then that is, like, a completely different thing that you, like, never have to handle in any kind of corporate situation of, like, the client getting mad at you like that. But that is something that is possible to happen while freelance. Thankfully, it's never happened to me because I would like to say I have good communication, but then also because, like, clarifying with the client, like, okay, this is what we're working on. Like, this is what we're trying to accomplish. Like, is this, like, exactly what we're talking about final deliverables wise as well? Because, like, the final deliverable could be, oh, make me an iOS app. And it's just like, there's kind of a lot of steps in that. So having to fully break down something with the client of, like, okay, what do you actually want in this iOS app? And it has to go as granular as, okay, is there an authentication? What authentication? And just really breaking it down with the client of, this is what we're actually talking about, which goes further into, how you structure just like the freelance clients that you take on. Like, are you just taking on like an hourly project where you're just doing work that they want you to do? And you're just like more corporate wise of like, okay, let me just complete these tickets. You know how the app works. Like, you kind of just slowly get things done. Or is it a completely different structure where you lay out everything from the very beginning to the very end? This is what this project entails. And then come up with a price for that too as well. So it varies dramatically depending on the client and like literally what your goals are with those clients as well.
So in corporate and in freelance, there is the demand of always going for new knowledge. And I'm curious, in each of your cases, how do you keep current, or what do you do to keep learning some of the new information? And I'll stay with you, Michaela.
For learning new information, in Swift, there's always something new. Like, I think Swift 5.10 just dropped, so we get all new stuff with that. So for me, I like to keep up with like all different blogs and podcasts of like different topics. And then that really helps with like staying current with like topics in the industry. But then what's super nice is as a freelancer, you are, which also applies for corporate as well, but you're paid to learn things. So if your client wants you to do something that you do not know how to do, you could say, yes, I will do that for you and learn how to do it in the process of figuring out how to do that thing, which is completely valid. We're all like learning how to do things. You're not going to know everything. So like you can't always do something for a client where you know exactly how to complete the task. But keeping up with blogs, podcasts, what else is there? Like YouTube videos, like all sorts of stuff. Being on social media, like I'm on all the social medias, which I wouldn't recommend. I would probably say like choose a couple, but don't do what I do, which is have all of them. But like Twitter, Threads, Mastodon, like all the things. People talk about things that are new and then they start trending. So seeing what is going on there. But then like that's like keeping up with the industry, but then also super nice being a freelancer. You just get paid to learn new things too.
We'll be right back with more of our interview with Michaela and Bhagat in just a moment.
The way I see it, so there are two sides of this coin. The first one are features in iOS that benefit the product, right? Such that, for example, live activities for e-commerce, right? Or you can say something like an app clip, right? That would benefit the product, that would increase numbers and all of that. I would say those things come up on a higher priority list, and engineers are free to, especially in my org, engineers are free to propose what they want to implement in their app. They fire up a proposal and it gets through the engineering manager, and my engineering manager is very good. So he just tells us to do whatever we want to do. Like we can go crazy on the app, have Siri shortcuts, have live activities, all of that, right? Then the other side of the coin is some things like only the developers know about. For example, moving all of your completion handlers to async await, right? That wouldn't come up very high into products priority lists. So that's where you take kind of a setback where you choose your battle very wisely. You just try and propose something to all of your fellow engineers that see, now we need to move to an async await kind of a thing. Then all of you try to slowly migrate your completion handler functions to async await along with your product tasks, right? So I would say things like this take time, but some things that come with product, for example, an app clip that can boost app installs, that would take a higher priority and precedence over something like this.
Bhagat, Ari, I don't know if you can answer this, but your product, is it currently on the latest OS, or does it have to serve many OSs going backwards?
Right. So we support minimum IS 14.
And we're on 17 now.
Kind of in the SwiftUI territory, right, right.
And I guess, Michaela, from an indie point of view, you can support whatever OS you want.
Yes, which is super nice. So I'm building an app right now, and it's iOS 17. But then, of course, like iOS 18 is right around the corner. So it's going to be released for 17 soon, but then I could just decide, hey, let me just bump it to 18 because I can. Even if, like, you lose users, it's an indie app. So unless you, like, hit it big from the very beginning, like, you're not really going to leave that many people behind.
Right. I think it might work for an indie app, but not for a freelance client as well, right? They might also ask you to keep a minimum version support, right?
Yeah, it's actually super nice. Me personally, the two clients that I have are iOS 17 minimum for both of them. So that is super nice. But previously, because I've been working on this project for a while, it was iOS 14. And then we've slowly bumped it up basically as the years go on because of the client and the application that he's making. It's part of a... what is it? Part of like a company sort of. So because of that, they like are required to bump the version of their iPads and iPhones and stuff. So because of that, we can just bump the app version as well too, just because like the company is already requiring them to update. So we just are naturally upgrading the Xcode project as well, which is super nice though too.
Right. We were stuck with iOS 10 until last year So it's kind of a utility app, so you cannot force users to get off of it. So, yeah, last year we made a collective call to, like, bump up the version. So, yeah.
So one of the things that we deal with in the corporate world is work-life balance. And you talked about the fact that initially you would Slack people or ping people at 10 p.m. and then you decided not to. How do you maintain that clear work-life balance? Do you go home and it's done? You don't touch it at all? Or do you mix it? Bhagat?
Right. So this is a tricky question because there are days where I would do that, but there are days that I would strictly won't do that, right? So for example, if you are in the middle of a very big thing that needs to go out, so it's understandable in the team to like just sit and ship it. But there are some things that come up very frequently or not so frequently that you might want to say like, I'll just get to it tomorrow, right? And fortunately, my employers are very understanding in that way that right now they don't ping you after like you get to home or after a certain amount of time. You can snooze your Slack notifications outside of the work hours, all of that. So yeah, it's just about drawing a very clear line. Where does this stop? And I think it's pretty generous with all of us here. Yeah.
Now, Michaela, you mentioned the fact that your work area is right next to your bed. And instead of, I guess, work-life balance for you, how do you manage the life-work balance?
Yeah, it's, I would say, a little bit more blurred, like, for better or worse at the moment. Also, because I like iOS development, so, like, I think it's fun anyways. And because of that, I'll end up doing something at, like, 8 p.m. or sometimes like I will take client calls at like 8 p.m. just because my client is based in now Germany. Previously, it was APAC, like the Asia Pacific region. And so we were like 12 hours apart. So his a.m. was my p.m., but I kind of like to work at night. So then we would have a call and it actually kind of worked out perfectly when it was like 12 hours apart just because my night, his day. And then we were like it's very easy kind of to hop into a call like that, as opposed to when the time zone change is like the person is 6 to 8 hours ahead of you. It's far enough that like it's very hard to like schedule things here and there. So because of that, it's I balance things as in attempting to prioritize, I would say would be the best way, because I'm still like working on it. And that's something that I've released recently is a blog post series where I'm going to write like a monthly retrospective of like what I've worked on and how I felt like about that work of like, oh, I did pretty good this month, or like something happens that's like, okay, this month was absolutely useless. I kind of got nothing done. So because of that, it's just the hard thing is just prioritizing, I would say, of picking, like, what are the tasks you have to work on? What, like, is things you must complete? So, like, if you must complete something, well, if you didn't do anything throughout your 9 to 5, because I decided to go snowboarding all day, okay, that means, am I going to be doing this tonight when I'm tired after snowboarding? Or does that mean I'm going to go to bed early and work on it the next day?
I can really relate to what Michaela is saying, and also being a night person, and I'm the same way. I find sometimes during daylight hours, I cannot focus in a chair. And I need to be active, and I'm always on the fence of should I work at night? Should I work during the day? What are my priorities? But God, I'd like to ask in the corporate setting, what do people who are night owls do? I know that not everyone has their productive periods during the day. Do you have anyone on your team, or have you ever experienced that where people prefer to work at night? Is the corporate able to accommodate that?
Right. So I'm myself a night owl, and I cannot put some focus in the day, and especially while I'm in office. So what I try to do is I tend to finish all of my discussions, my meetings, and my know-hows and my how-tos in my daytime. Since that's when I'm the most collaborative, I have most of the people around me. So I find it very quick to just go on their desk and block some time with them, finish it up during the day. And I try to get some coding hours in the day as well, but night is when I feel the most productive. So it's about getting the task done within a certain deadline. I think nobody's going to question whether it happened during the day or the night, right? So you just say out your timelines. For example, I'm going to build a search screen. It's going to take me a week, right? Nobody's going to bother you for that whole week. And they're going to understand if something came up during that week. Like, why wasn't it done? Something came up. Okay, I need 2 more days. Okay, done, right? So it's about communication along with that. But nobody's going to bother you until you say, like, a week is done. So, yeah.
One of the things that happens, at least to me in the corporate world, is there's a lack of freedom for things like conferences. Bagat, do you get out to any conferences? Do you have to take time off from work, or do they allow you to go to conferences? How does that work for you?
I go out to conferences. My experience has been pretty good with my employer. They don't. So they believe that the more an engineer learns, the better they're going to perform and the better return they're going to get on their apps, right? It's kind of like that. So I've never seen anyone getting stopped from going to a conference or foreign learning experience for that matter, right? So people are free to get books up till, like, we have a corporate budget for that, for the whole team. You're free to get something that enhances your knowledge, enhances your learning, and at the same time helps you in the day-to-day work that you do. So for example, if you're gonna get a Codeco book, right, you're gonna bill it off the corporate allowance for learning, right? So and anybody can do that. It's just a matter of raising an invoice or something. So yeah, it's pretty flexible that way.
That leads me to a question for Michaela. I also get some sponsorship from my employer. If you want to attend a conference or learn a new course, do any of your clients sponsor that for you, or do you have to pay out of pocket for all of that?
I would say in a way, it's like through a client, just because they're already paying me to do work. So then that's the money that I then have, and then that's the money I take and then we'll use for a conference. So it's like inadvertently sponsored by clients, but generally it's kind of directly out of pocket for me. I decide, okay, should I go to this conference? How much does it cost to fly there? What is accommodation? How much food would be? Estimate all of that. And then be like, okay, is this conference worth it for me to go to from just a purely like financial point? Because then you also think of the flying as well of, oh, I've got to fly over there. What happens if the flight gets delayed? Am I losing that much time in like, are my deadlines flexible enough that like my client's like, oh, you can just take off to go do this. Hey, I'm going to be out the entire next week. Like, I'm not going to be doing any work. Like, I'll call you back basically after that week. So then that goes back into like communication too with the client about the deadlines that they have and what they want to get done as well. Because that's, I think, the hardest thing about freelance work versus like any kind of corporate is that like, when do you take vacation? Because you have deadlines that you have deadlines with your client. And if you're doing all the work, that means you're doing all the work. And so you have to then figure out, okay, what happens if I get sick? Like, how do you communicate that? Like, what gets done? Does everything like cease to get done? How does all that go into play, basically?
Michaela, I want to stay with you because you said something about how the money comes from the contract, and then you decide the money goes to this for a conference. Do you actually have anything like an LLC or a business to keep personal separate from business funding, or do you basically just sort of keep it all in your head?
I have what's called a single member LLC. So this is basically an LLC company that's just owned by one person, and one person is the one who's controlling all of that. It's technically what's called like a pass-through entity. So in reality, like taxes, United States, do not take tax advice from me, but this is what I have set up, is that it's a pass-through entity, meaning I'm still taxed like as an individual, and it's really not separate on taxes. But what you do as a single member LLC is that like it's kind of like an extra form that is attached to your taxes. That is like all business related stuff. But like legally, it's your two separate things where if I get sued, they can sue my LLC. They cannot sue me personally.
Yeah, I got to the point on my indie project where I said I've got to keep my funding and funds for the project separate from my personal funds. And yeah, it gives you that distance of they can sue you for the company, and they can't sue you, but It's daunting. And again, we're not giving any legal or financial advice here. About the only thing I can give you advice wise is get an accountant or get a lawyer and have them answer the questions for you so that you know what you're doing. But God, I guess in your world, it's much simpler that you get paid and that's your money and you're done.
Yep. You do whatever you want to do with it. Yep.
So both of you, are very active in different ways in iOS community work. Bhagat, you have done a lot with Codeco and the boot camps. Michaela, I could spend 15 minutes doing a litany of what you've done. How important is this engagement for your career, and how do you approach that engagement? Bhagat, let's start with you on this one.
Right, so I feel that at the end of the day, whether you're working in a corporate or, you know, working as a freelancer, working as an indie, the goal at the end of the day is to learn more, right? I believe that you learn more by, of course, there are online resources on everything, and whatever I type into Google, I'll get an article on it and all of that. But I feel that you learn from experiences of people more than you learn from stuff online. So that's why I ask all my friends, ask all my colleagues, and me myself, like head out to meetups, meet new people, ask them like what are they working on, see if you can collaborate. You'll find interesting challenges there. You'll find some problems there. You'll learn more. So yeah, I think all of that plus, as you mentioned, boot camps, right? And the amazing Codeco contributor community. So by collaborating with all of these people, by, let's say, editing an article or, you know, mentoring a boot camp, by collaborating with all of those people, you get to learn something new every day, which you might or might not have missed. So there are so many things that I have learned from my bootcamp students that they would ask me up in the happy hours or in a separate session that I wouldn't come across if I wasn't to mentor the bootcamp, right? So it's about maintaining that balance, like you're learning also and you're working also. So learning kind of lets off of pace. It's just very good to keep up to it by doing all of this.
And Michaela, what would you say is the importance of this community and your outreach?
I really like the importance of like community and everything for me is at first, I just wanted to be able to get a job and never have to apply to anything. So because of that, that naturally led to me like talking in forums and like learning online and like collaborating with others, because the best way to learn something is to teach it to somebody else. And sometimes the best person to teach you something is somebody who just learned something. So like, I remember when I was learning closures, somebody taught me. And then like later on, I met this person like finally at a conference, but like they were the first person to teach me closures. And it's because they had just learned how to closures work themselves. And that is, I think, like super helpful. So for me, at first, it was like, I just wanted to talk to other people too, who did iOS development, because where I live in Indiana, there's not people who do much iOS dev around here, or I like never found it sort of. So because of that, especially in the pandemic, that naturally leads like to everybody talking online. And then like Clubhouse was really popular. And like, I ended up talking on Clubhouse with a bunch of people. And then that's actually how I ended up finding like the employer that I had for the past like 2 years, was through Clubhouse and then through Twitter. And then I ended up applying when they had an open role. And because of that, they like kind of knew me. They were like, oh yeah, that's the person who we talked to on Clubhouse that has a unicorn as their profile picture. Like, it's like it naturally led that way just because I wanted to chat with other people about what I was learning and like learn new things from others as well. So that just all naturally led into like, I think this is fun to chat with other people about this, which is also one reason why I really like iOS Dev Happy Hour, is because you just get to chat with other people about iOS dev, and you can talk like in technical terms, and like people know what the question is when they say like, what's the difference between SwiftUI and UIKit, and like you can have a conversation about that, versus like some people in your everyday life, like you may not be able to talk about those kind of things, and it's like you're just bubbling with information that you just want to chat with others about, like in technical terms, and you sometimes just can't do that. So then that's fun chatting on social media for that way of like partially learning, and then partially like you never know who you're gonna meet, and that person like may have a job opportunity for you down the line, or they may then be like a freelance client right down the line, and like you don't know if you don't try.
I wish we had time to play the entire interview, but if you'd like to see the interview with all the material, watch YouTube for the full video version.
Michaela and Bhagat, you've given us great insight into the different lives of being both at corporate and indie. And as somebody who is trying to continually bridge that gap of being a weekly corporate, a weekend indie, it is quite the experience and quite the different worlds. And I really want to thank both of you for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yep, pleasure was mine.
We will be back in another 2 weeks. As I have mentioned on previous shows, we talked about the move from XML to Jetpack Compose, and we will give that same kindness to iOS, talking about moving from UIKit into SwiftUI, and I think that's going to be a great show. But that's going to wrap things up for this episode. Normally, I would just sort of say goodbye and let it trail off, but I'm going to let Michaela take us out of here, because Michaela is one of the hosts of the iOS Dev Happy Hour, which always closes on a happy note with this following saying. So, Michaela, take us home.
So, everybody, raise whatever drink you have. If you've seen, I drank like water in a clear mug because I like water. So, for everybody, may all your pain be champagne, and may all your bills be $100 bills. So, cheers to everybody.
And thank you so much. We'll see you in a few weeks. Bye-bye.
And that's a wrap. Thanks again, everybody, for listening to the Codeco podcast. We hope you enjoyed it, and don't forget to leave a rating in your favorite podcast app. See you next time.